My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. This episode is a fun one. We kind of break down some of the specifics of what makes a great multiplayer experience for us. So I've got my two guests. I've got a new guest. So his first appearance on the show, my brother Casey, is the first conversation we'll hear. And then I've got my good buddy Austin on the back half of the episode. But between the two, we've broken down and kind of had a discussion around what makes a great multiplayer experience. So it's kind of fun to think about like elements of games that we enjoyed and like the reasons we kind of like felt attached to certain games and kind of picking those apart and dissecting it, not just kind of, you know, sharing some personal favorites or anything, which I always have a good time doing that. But this really kind of gets into the weeds of it, and I really enjoy breaking down aspects of games and pulling apart why it is that I'm attracted to them or why it is that, you know, individuals enjoy what they enjoy. So have a good time listening. And if you have any thoughts, comments, likes, shares, anything like that at all, leave that in your below or rate it and review it, whatever podcast platform you're listening on. That stuff helps. Get in touch with me with social media at Darren Hupke on Threads and Instagram and Blue Sky. You can find me places. And only 2 weeks left, slightly less or slightly more, just about 2 weeks, on my Kickstarter. So I've got my new book, 32-Bit Library Volume 4, that's being funded. It's a retro gaming book that I wrote and created and played through the games and captured the screenshots and taught myself how to use Adobe InDesign and did the layouts and did the design and did the production side and logistics of and all of it. I've got some great collaborators, though, as well, returning for some bonus content and bonus essays. John Linneman from Digital Foundry and DF Retro, Adi Zorli from Lemon Run Games, Kurt Collada from Hardcore Gaming 101, and a bunch of his own great video game content and video game books, and Jason Dvorak from Game Rave TV. So they've been participating in the previous volumes and continue to provide extra content here. So check out the link in the show description. There's a bunch of info on the project there. If you know any friends who like video games, you're listening to a video game podcast, hopefully you have others you can socialize with. It would be great for you to share that link. That helps and goes a long way. Enough of me trying to sell myself. I appreciate you for listening this long. Let's just jump into the episode. Boo-da-da-boo intro. Bom-bom-bom.
Waka-chicka-waka-chicka-waka-chicka.
I got my music, but, you know, I don't do it while I'm recording it. Cool. Well, welcome to another episode of, I don't know, I'm doing the whole intro to the whole show. Scrap that part. Today I'm going to have a first-time guest, my brother Casey Hupke. So because it's your first time, Casey, I'd like you to maybe just introduce yourself, tell us a little about what you do, and I don't know, just anything that you'd like to kind of share or say or plug or whatever. But then also there will be an icebreaker question, and that's going to be if you could live at any – I asked this the other day, but if you could live at any starting location from a video game, where would you want to retire to? It's kind of a weird
one. Oh, man.
It's kind of weird. So you can introduce yourself first, and then in the background, think about that, and then
okay.
Go from there.
Oh, God. Hey, I'm Casey Hupke. I'm Darren's brother. I'm a creative director, freelance artist person in Los Angeles. I do a lot of motion graphics and visual effects for commercials and product design and that kind of thingy. You can find my work at empty.estate. And holy moly, where would I retire? Starting Zones intrinsically kind of suck and you can't wait to get out of them. Like, am I just going to be baffled by tutorial mode goblins the whole time? Like,
yeah,
is what the so we're talking like, this is like a rural area. At best case scenario, I'm living in a town from Pokemon where children at the age of 9 just wander out of their homes and into the wastes. And it's a bunch of single mothers just...
Professor Oak sowing them oats, though.
Sowing them wild oaks. Dang, you know, oak is a hardwood.
He is a hardwood.
Is that a family podcast?
It is. No, it's explicit.
Great, fuck, fart. Starting zone that I would retire to.
Yeah, I don't think this is my best one. I thought of this one the other day on the fly but we're going to go with it. You can answer other icebreakers on other episodes.
I think that, well, what's the starting town in Ivalis in Final Fantasy Tactics Advanced? Like, I can't remember what the name of that town is, but it's a pretty good-sized town. Like, they've got, you know, it's not like traditionally podunk or like, you know, like it doesn't, you start there and you meet a whole bunch of important people. So probably there's plenty of stuff there, crafting goods, and you're able to form and build your alliances and meaningful relationships, it seems, from this location if you want to.
That's pretty good. The doesn't it start? I've not played that in a while, but doesn't it start like with a snowball fight? You're technically in like the real world, quote unquote, and then you get pulled into Ivalis.
Yes.
Yeah. So yes. So would it be that like safe, snowy, like human abode, or like actually go to town? You want to go to the starting town where you can get some quests.
Town where the kid has no. It does not care that he's seeing like Bantas and Mogs and. He's like, oh, these creatures as anthropomorphic humanoids, this totally makes sense to me. This clicks. Also, if I put a different weapon in my hand, I learn new abilities. All of this tracks. None of this needs explanation.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that's a good choice. That's a cool one. Okay. Well, then, welcome to the show. We'll have a few episodes. We'll record some stuff pretty regularly, I think, me and you. But today, we wanted to answer this question. What makes a great multiplayer experience for you? So, I mean, if you wanted to share like an example of a good multiplayer game, you can, but like, you know, if you were to craft like a great multiplayer experience, what are the things that like matter most to you or build and create that overall like lasting quality experience for you?
I think the best multiplayer experiences that I've ever had have been in like tabletop role-playing games like Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder, where you're basically sitting there with a breadcrumb of a piece of story and a couple of ideas, some dice rolls, and then it's just a lot of improv on like baddie has thing or situation has thing. How are you guys going to get out of this thing? And you have like the total carte blanche freedom to say like, oh, I'm going to like do a backflip off of Jake's shoulders and land on Karen's shoulders. And then I'm going to do a spin kick and try to jump. And then you roll the dice and see it happen. But I think the things that are important about that, like that I see when I see a good video game multiplayer experience, are when everyone's contribution to a goal or a moment are really felt. And no one feels like they're being carried. No one feels like they missed something, or no one's racing to catch up with someone else. It's all everyone's kind of doing something important to the moment that's being developed. And I think as long as you start with that as the goal, you end up with a really great multiplayer experience.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, are there games that come to mind that you think that you'd pull from, or are there games that you come to mind that you do like just tag in the back of your brain as like great multiplayer experiences?
Yeah, I mean, I think Destiny and Destiny 2 both have had like some tremendous successes and failures when it comes to creating great and horrible multiplayer experiences. But like some of the ones that will always, I was just talking about this maybe 10 minutes ago before this call, the loot cave in Destiny. I can't remember like how many hours during Destiny 1, like I was on my PlayStation with my headset on talking to people that were all sitting staring at this loot cave with a sniper rifle from the distance, just like shooting, and like this is terrible gameplay and it was an exploit, but like we were all doing this simple mundane thing, and they went on to like make nostalgic callbacks to the loot cave in other portions of the game's story. And they made community bonding and community engagement part of a thing that only really exists in their MMO. Their legendary weapons and their exotic weapons, they had these like weeks long quests that took like weeks, months to like have the community crack. Oh, they never like, because it was a console game and a sort of like black box PC game, you couldn't just like data mine the whole install and be like, oh, the weapon's over here, you need to do this and this and this and get it. It was like, no, if you want that that sniper rifle that they teased, or maybe the weapon that you didn't even know existed, but someone actually accidentally saw like a language and they were like, oh, I think that character means this, and then they hop on a Discord server. Like anything like stuff like that that gets like communities involved and like builds like lasting memories is just a really cool thing. And then I think World of Warcraft has been building a tremendous multiplayer experience for you know, however many decades now.
Yeah, when we when I talked to Thomas about that, he chimed in with MMOs being like really good because that same type of thing, like the collaboration and the input from like multiple people, like, you know, like you're all kind of like aiming for the same goal, but it could be either frustrating or it could be either like super rewarding, you know, if you're with the right group and everything.
On a simple side, I think that something else, like, just it popped into my head. I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm thinking multiplayer very like micro in the sense of like a computer online multiplayer, massive multiplayer online game. But like realistically, the X-Men arcade game had a great multiplayer experience because it was a four-person horizontal co-op that had this huge field of vision that you could see everything that was going on. You rarely really lost your character. The game and pacing and stuff was really low, like, and you all got to play together. And if you were on the show Ghost Rider, you could play backwards.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like the idea of like when you mentioned Destiny specifically, like when a game has like a really like specific challenge, like there was like in Destiny 1, one of my favorite exotic guns was like that Thorn hand cannon that like did damage over time. Just kind of like a neat little gimmick for it. But like to get it, you had to do this like extra level, like challenge difficulty, like instance, like fight. You kind of already were in that area before. You've already played in that zone before, but it was just like against like a few waves of like really intense and really difficult enemies. And only the player who had the active quest was actually going to get that like key item and they get that drop to be able to get what they needed. But you could bring along like friends to help you and everything. So, like that was always cool to me when you didn't all have to be at the same stage. You didn't all have to be at the same step necessarily, but you could still support somebody or jump in or could have already gotten it yourself and are just going to go back and help somebody get it. So when a game was like open enough to allow people to revisit or, you know, retrial themselves and you have like a high level challenge, it's just super rewarding. Cause I probably did it dozens of times of like dozens of failures and just like getting by at the skin of your teeth and just try, you know, just getting that right run together that, you know, lets you max out and win, always felt really good. But yeah, good multiplayer experiences. Yeah. I mean, I'd like a good multiplayer game. I've said it before and my call is still out there. I will play Destiny again, with anybody who wants to like commit to playing, anybody at all. It's just been such a good time. I'm really looking forward to whatever they do next with that. There is supposed to be some final, like, the final light or the last light or something weird. They have like some big thing planned. Like,
yeah, there's something coming out that I was like, oh, I should maybe grab. I have a friend who plays like all the time. So has been playing since Destiny 2 came out. Basically, never gives up the ghost. But I can't bring myself to do it.
Yeah, right now, I think every expansion, like everything leading up to it, is free. So if you were a player who's catching up, you have like some point in June where all of that's free to like access to like play and dabble in. But cool. Well, that's the question. That's what makes a great multiplayer experience for you. So thanks for sharing your answer, Casey, and we'll definitely be on future episodes with each other. So thanks for joining.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
want to maybe just introduce yourself for a moment and
I'm Austin Johns, been a long time player of video games. I guess I've probably put in a good, I don't know, 30 plus years now, 33 years, maybe something like that. 30, you know.
And then I asked Thomas this when I had him on for the first, but what is your favorite Nintendo 64 game?
That's just a random question to throw in. Yeah,
just a random icebreaker thing to see if you, you know, like, if you could think of one off the top of your head.
I mean, I'm torn between two games, but I'll go with The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
I think I have the episode with Thomas posted. Maybe I did. Maybe I didn't. If it's not, it's coming soon.
I think you did, because I did listen whichever ones. I think he chose Majora's Mask.
Yeah, he chose Majora's Mask. Yeah. All right.
What about you? Mario 64?
Probably. Yeah, probably. I asked the questions, okay? I don't have to answer them.
Okay. All right.
I think it would be Mario 64. Yeah, I think that's the safest bet. I think there's some games that are like, I want to play now. Like, I was just at that Game On Expo, and I've got that Polymega system finally came in. And I got the Nintendo 64 add-on thing to rip the 64 game. So I was putting all the cartridges I have there. But I wanted to get Rush 2 or... what was that? Weather futuristic
Rush 2049, dude. That was another one. We played the stunt mode of that as a multiplayer game. Also, you would guy would try to get a crazy score, pass the controller. Guy would try to get a crazy score.
Just a crazy trick or a crazy just stunt and all that stuff in it. And like I saw a few people selling that. And I was thinking like, man, that'd be a good game to buy just to have. So, I mean, I'm not looking to go back and play Mario 64 a bunch, but I was like really jonesing to like, you know what, Rush, you know, 2064 or was it 2064?
I think it's 2049, I think.
2049 or 2099. Okay, yes. It was, yes, 2049. Yeah, you're right. Which is not too far away, really, you know.
I know.
Technology should be getting there pretty much. So we have these futuristic jet bike cars that can flip at 300 miles per hour over stunt courses.
Yeah, I also saw that, this is just unrelated now, but I saw you had posted some photos of like the arcade setup, I think, and somebody had a really cool Super Monkey Ball cabinet. Man, that's so cool.
That must have been a Japanese cabinet, but it was like that cool like sit down style design. But the controller like looked cool. Like I didn't realize they had an arcade version of that. Didn't get a chance to play it, but it was kind of cool. They had a Jambo Safari next to Crazy Taxi as well for your vehicle-based Sega drifting games. There's a lot of good stuff there. But what I guess the way it's phrased, but it could, you know, doesn't have to be scientific to this answer. But what makes a great multiplayer experience for you is the question. So do you have an idea of an answer already for yourself that would make a great multiplayer experience? A game have a great multiplayer experience, or do you have a memory of a great multiplayer experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I would answer that, yeah. And I don't know if that is bending or breaking any rules, but yeah, I definitely have an idea of how I would answer that, I think.
Yeah, then give it. Shout it.
So yeah, what makes a great multiplayer experience? I think that's an interesting question. I mean, obviously, the first thing that comes to mind is multiplayer games that people can play simultaneously. But I will push back on that. I actually think that is not the only criteria for a great multiplayer game. I can think of a lot of times having a really good time playing like Grand Theft Auto and kind of making our own, like, okay, it's a five star challenge, like something where, you know, it might be like if you're going to play a game in a multiplayer sense like that, you're looking at maybe a 10, 15 minute burst that a guy gets to kind of do his thing. That's a bunch of buddies laughing and having a good time. So something like that would come to mind as one way that you can have a great multiplayer experience.
The five-star challenge, you know, for people who don't know,
sure.
This is actually when we would pass the controller around for GTA 3 back in the PS2 days. And just like, you know, rather than like not figure out a game to play or not like, I mean, we enjoyed that game. We were already playing that game, but we just like, all right, here, you take the controller, try and get 5 stars and try and last as long as you can with that wanted level against the cops. Like, you know, then we ended up coming up with some rules. Like you couldn't like stand on like a weird rooftop and just like not move or something like that, because there's some like weird...
there were some glitches you could kind of exploit, I think.
But yeah, but it was always kind of fun because you just like be like joyriding and like, you know, high speed chasing it, but then ultimately you get like the FBI cars and like then ultimately the tanks and stuff like that would come in and like, all right, you can't really be on foot really, nor can you be in just an average car or for all, like, anyway.
Even like with like GTA, I guess that would have been 5. If I was like kind of bored at some point, you know, I'd maybe beaten the game was far enough. I would sometimes just mess around, like, yeah, you know what? Let's see how far I can take this. You know, that's something I still do when I play a GTA game, even by myself, just to mess around. You know, so I think that's it translates well for like just kind of a pass the controller kind of a multiplayer experience. And I mean, if you think of a game like a game like Super Monkey Ball, a fantastic multiplayer game, but a lot of the fun like party games, it's kind of like, it's not past the controller, but it's kind of like, okay, I go, you go, I go, you go. So it's the same. I mean, it's the same idea. It's just that, you know, we came up with the multiplayer for that, you know? And then I think we also, and I don't want to sit here and talk about single player games too much, but we also, I think I recall doing this with Tony Hawk. I think it was like maybe before they had split screen, or split screen didn't perform that well. I seem to remember it would just be who could get the highest score. Like, you just play a level, like go to town, like do your best and get like a super high score. And then like the next guy would just go and see if he could do a line that would be like higher than that, you know? So I don't know if I'm answering the question, but I mean, I think,
I think you are. I think it's an interesting angle to take. I mean, cause it was like, we didn't invent multiplayer, but we made it like, whether that was a high score style competition back and forth, or like you do a level, I do a level, like mini game wise, like, you know, just, hey, who can be better or do better here in this level, like competing, but also still making progress in that sense. But even the GTA thing, that was like, we could make a game that didn't have this component entertaining and the ability for all of us to interact with it in short enough bursts that none of us were like sitting there bored, but like we could all like participate basically and have fun while doing it.
Yeah. And so I guess just to like, I mean, to call out some actually simultaneous multiplayer games, ones that would come to mind would be like the Nintendo 64 wrestling games, were a lot of fun to play, you know, four players, obviously, GoldenEye 007 and Perfect Dark, you know, those kind of introductions to shooters. GoldenEye probably would be the one we got the most into. I don't know if I could even say that. With GoldenEye, we were so paranoid of screen peeking and so competitive that if you were to lose, then it had to have been some conspiracy. So we had actually put up a cardboard divider on the screen so that, you know, to ensure that no one could see the other side.
But the cardboard screen, that was like a work in progress, because it was like we used it, but then we realized that there was a little bit of light leak, you know, a little bit of things so you could see if the screen was moving or not. So then it was like additional layers of like thin, like torn pieces of paper that would like try and just like cover up the little light leaks just to really make sure, like, it's not that you're better than me at this game, it's that you can still see if I'm like aiming down my sights or if I'm still moving, and that's why you got the jump on me.
Man,
those are good times.
And then even with like the wrestling games, we would take it pretty far too, where like, you know, whoever held the belt was like a big deal. And I think they had in the later games that had a create a wrestler mode, they had the you could have like scars. So you do like the first blood match, and then if the guy loses that match, then he now has a scar on his face, you know. So like we got really into the sort of competitive multiplayer games. But I say this just to, I guess, just state the obvious, that I think what makes a good multiplayer game is just a good, fun game that you can, you know, toss around to your buddies. Like, it doesn't even have to necessarily be a good game, but as long as it's fun and everyone's enjoying it, it's a good multiplayer game, yeah. I think. I mean,
it's kind of like the pizza answer, you know? I mean, it's kind of good, like, you know, no matter what type of thing, as long as you have, like, you know, a friend who's in the same mindset to, like, pass the control around or just kind of be, like, you know, competitive, but not, like, competition wise, you know, like having fun and like wanting to be the best but not being like hurt or harmed. Actually, I take that back. There were some belt matches, there were some of those matches that like would like, all right, fuck it, I'm gonna go hang out with Thomas for a little while now because like we're just pissed at you right now for beating us, and maybe like 30 to 1 hour cooldown times of like, oh, motherfucker.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously it was highly competitive, but I mean, you know, it's, I think it's one of those like is it the game, or is it just like hanging out with your friends, you know, and playing the game? Like, so I don't know. For me, that's kind of what I think. And even if you go back to like early, like Mario Brothers 1, right? That's multiplayer, but it's literally, okay, you go, I go, you go, I go kind of a thing. So, I mean, I think if the game is good, I think it helps, but I don't think it's necessarily required either. I've played plenty of bad Mario Party games and had a really good time with people.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I think it's a good answer.
Well, yeah. What are you thinking?
I had talked with someone else about this, Brian Rigsby from RetroGameBooks.com. I had had a conversation with him and answered this question, but we were talking similarly, just kind of about like mechanics and balance and things like that. And so we were kind of thinking more and speaking like more to like legitimate multiplayer games. So I just like the angle of thinking about how we either invented multiplayer out of it or like found the like turn-based or turn-by-turn like a skew of multiplayer. So I think it's just a cool angle to think about it as. I mean, I would kind of disagree with you in those same games. You know, obviously I was there to play. The Tony Hawk stuff was always like super fun because the game is designed to have 2-minute runs, and so it was really easy to, like, you know, like, you weren't without the controller for too long, and that made you want to kind of perfect, like, that run or that line or something on a level even more. So it built skill, but then it also just made challenge and just more entertainment and everything as well, too.
Yeah, that was a good one. I think there was a time when we were both getting better and better, and Thomas probably, too, like, better and better, but kind of, like, there wasn't like a clear kind of dominant person at that point. I don't think it kind of overtake each other, but then it reached a point where you and him, I think, took off beyond what I was, but I had like a different style of trying to like get high scores in that game. But it reached a point where I was no longer competitive in that game, I think, if I remember correctly. You know, it was fun while it lasted for me, which was quite a while. It was a good competitive run there for it.
But. Well, yeah, I think we played we played Tony Hawk 1, I mean, quite a bit, but I mean, and that was, didn't have the manual move. And then when 2 came out, we still played it the same way we played 1. But then you realize that, like, wait, like, yes, points and multiplier, like, that's where you're going to kind of break this system a little bit more. So, you can only end a run or, a line with a vert move if you kept a lot of, like, street and grind moves together. So, whereas you would have, like, a consistent trickle of a score because it was, like, just vert stuff, it was, like, you know, like put all your eggs in one basket and have like one really long run and hope that was going to like, you know, land and then win and everything. So that was just the way that Tony Hawk was evolving. It kind of made us evolve the way we competed. Cool. Well, that will wrap this question and we'll kind of wrap the conversation here. So thanks, Austin.